Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Mike Galliano, 33 years of career experience, retired captain on Ladder 5 with Seattle Fire Department. Mike's love for the fire service goes unmatched. Not saying there aren't others out there with the same passion and drive, but I'm telling you all, listen to how Mike talks regarding what the fire service has given him and done for him regarding his family and his faith. I thoroughly enjoyed listening to Mike preach the good word, and I hope the listeners can pick up on the gems and nuggets Mike speaks along the way. With that, I present Mike Galliano.
Hey, gang. This is Mike Galliano coming to you from the hour north of Seattle, Washington, on a blustery, chilly, typical winter day for us. It's a privilege to hang out with you, gang. I look forward to talking to you. I love the fire service. Love the folks who take on our calling, take on our badge, and just want to do this thing in the right way. It has been my privilege to be a member of the fire service for heading towards over 40 years now, and 33 years getting on fire trucks and going to fires. Four of that was with the United States Air Force riding a crash rig, and 29 of that was Seattle Fire. I got into the fire service. I'll tell you, I didn't have like a really cool, like legacy, you know, fire story like some guys have. My grandfather was a firefighter, but he was a paid firefighter and did some volunteer work for a while, but then got on in California with Rockwell International. So it was much more systems-based type of stuff. So I never heard a whole lot of like, you know, cool fire stories or that type of thing. It wasn't really what drove me. I actually wanted to be a rock star, man. I wanted to sing in a rock band or play guitar or that type of thing. And there was just one problem there, and it was a complete and total lack of talent. Couldn't play, couldn't sing. So I got into the fire department by accident. I was actually going to school to do computers way back before computers were, you know, ubiquitous and all over the place. And my wife and I decided we wanted to get married. We met in college. Neither one of us had a whole lot of money, so we decided one of the best ways to get our college paid for would be to go into the Air Force. So I went into the Air Force and thought I was going to be a computer programmer and do that kind of stuff. And the Air Force pretty much does what they want with you. You know, that's the way the military is. They ask you where you want to go, and then they send you where they want you to go. And they ended up sticking me in the fire department. And I'll tell you what, there are moments in my life, I actually have many of them, where I know God is firmly looking out for me and guiding my path. And we professionally, Ann and I, we won the lottery when I got into the fire service and found a calling, found a passion. I would have gone nuts, man, being in an office all the time and sitting in front of a computer. And I got to go on the ride of my life. I'm still on it. It's such a blessing. Gang, as we talk about whatever, you know, questions you're going to ask, I'll never be able to fully repay the debt that I owe the fire service for what it has given to me and my family. The ability to make a living, at least in my case, make a living doing what I love, to be at people's worst moments and make impact at the very worst moment when they got no shot, man. And then just to the people that I got to work with. And, you know, and I'll be honest with you today. I'll be transparent. Not everybody I worked with was awesome. But, man, the majority of the people that I worked with some of the finest people that have ever walked the planet and got to be on incredible teams and go on rides you can't pay for. And I'll be grateful every day until I step into eternity that I have been allowed the privilege of being a member of the fire service.
I love it. I love it. So with that being said, how did Seattle come about? How did you find the Seattle Fire Department?
Yeah. Well, I was born in Southern California. My third or fourth grade year, my mom and dad relocated us up to the Pacific Northwest, actually to the panhandle of North Idaho, which is, you know, total change in climate and everything, you know, and again, it was wonderful. I loved living in SoCal, loved going back to SoCal. I don't have the hatred for Cali that everybody else seems to have. North Idaho was an incredible place to live. We've, you know, had a place up in the mountains and, you know, and then I met my wife in college there, and She was from the Seattle area, and we got stationed in Louisiana. You know, again, the Air Force sends you where they want to. They asked us where we wanted to live, and we said anywhere west of the Rockies would be awesome. You know, we're West Coast folks mostly. And the Air Force said, yeah, okay, and sent us to Louisiana. So, very different. Again, that was like going to a foreign country, you know, culture-wise and everything. And man, we loved it. We had such a good time there. Loved being in the South. Those people wrapped their arms around us and loved us. And the Air Force military was really good to us. Again, I will be grateful forever. They helped us get started. But, you know, to be candid, it wasn't the military wasn't really my cup of tea. I enjoyed my time. It was fine, but it wasn't really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. And so we decided to settle in Seattle area just because there were jobs there. You know, there were jobs and whatever. I got back at that time when you know, 30 some years ago, getting jobs wasn't easy. It was competitive, man. I mean, there were to get, you know, there was what, 80 jobs or something they would post for Seattle Fire, and there would be 6, 7, 8,000 people going for those jobs. I mean, it was hard. So you didn't just get on a job right away. I actually took a job as a corrections officer for a little while just to pay the bills. And then got the most amazing call of my life from Seattle Fire, the place that I wanted to work more than any. And you know, here it is. It all worked out. Again, truly grateful when I think back to where we were, you know, a young couple out of the military with two kids trying to make it. We really didn't have a ton of family support. I mean, we were loved, but there wasn't much support out there. I cannot tell you how grateful I am that I've gotten to go on this ride, brother.
Okay. So upon getting that letter of yes, all right, we have selected you to become a part of Seattle Fire Department. Did you have some sort of rookie school orientation or anything?
You know, it was pretty Spartan back then. You know, there wasn't a whole lot. We do a much better job of it in Seattle nowadays, but no, not really. You know, it was a pretty lengthy process. You know, you went through multiple interviews and chief's interviews and you know the physical agility test. It wasn't like the CPAT, man. It was a grinder, you know, the physical agility we had to go through, and it was all timed and ranked. There was no pass fail really, you know. You got you threw a big thing of 2.5 on your back with a big old brass novel, and you ran 7 floors, and they timed it, and you got ranked against everybody else, you know, or you had to do a hand over hand pull of a rope of 75 pounds, you know, up those 7 floors from the ground, and it was timed. So, you know, it wasn't okay, you did it and you made the minute. It was no, some other guy did it in 17 seconds, you did it in 19. Too bad, so sad kind of thing. So yeah, it was tough. It was hard. But no, as far as an orientation, no, not really. Basically, you got a phone call saying, hey, you've been accepted to Seattle Fire, come pick up your bunking gear at this place, and you know, that kind of stuff. So I can say though, our department now, and I'm sure most departments are doing a lot better job of a little bit of prep work and orientation. Even trying, I think as you're aware, my wife and I wrote a book on firefighter marriage. We get calls all the time from recruit academies that want to include that book in their entry process, so the couple, the families can know what's coming, you know, some of what's going to be brought into your relationship and that type of thing. So, but no, not really. Your orientation, you hit the ground running at a firehouse, and you know, now we had a recruit academy, obviously, you know, so that's where you kind of learned about the department. And I can't remember if it was, you know, 9, 10 weeks, something like that. And we did EMT. We did 2 weeks of EMT to get certified as EMTs at that. And you know, pretty intensive recruit academy, you know, and but I felt like, I don't know, I felt like our instructors did a good job. And by the time we hit the firehouse, we were, you know, for 8 to 10 weeks of training, we were as ready as we could be for what was going to be expected of us. And then the veterans, you know, they always describe it as you come out of recruit academy, you're kind of learning to walk, you know, and then at some point they're going to get you on a little bit of a jog as you get to the firehouse. And then over time you'll be running. But there's just only so much you can teach in a drill ground environment that, you know, it has to be learned in the firehouse. It has to be learned with the way real runs go and real calls go. But I always was very grateful for our training and what we had. And you know, as an encouragement to all of you, because I'm sure the people that are listening to this, you are students of the game, right? You don't just get it from your fire department. And if that's the way you approach it, if you're, listen, I'll probably get in trouble right off the bat here. If you're approaching this calling, but the fire department has to do it all for you, I just wish you would quit right now. I wish you would pack it up and I wish you would quit. I wish, you know, if you think that you need to be paid for everything you do, every hour of training you get, you know, number one, what a joke for most of the fire service, which is not in a paid department. You know, the backbone of the fire service is the volunteer fire service. That's where a good chunk of our people come. So when they're going to drill night or whatever, they may get a small stipend or they may get this or that, but it certainly isn't predicated on being paid for every hour that you do. And I will tell you, the students of the game that I know and that I respect and that have impacted this calling and who are worth a damn when it's actually real and you're not just, you know, doing a food on the stove or something like that, those folks spent money out of their own pocket, on their own time, on their own dime to go find the best training they could wherever they could. That's what I would encourage you to do. And the calling gets amazing when you commit to it. There is, gang, there's nothing cooler than being good at this thing. Because when seconds count, good people are needed. And when you're good, it's one of the most gratifying experiences you'll ever have.
Love it. All right. With that being said, what was your first assignment? And when you were at that assignment given, did you seek out those go-getters, those into the job members that you wanted to emulate to better yourself?
It's essential. You have to do that if you want to be good. Now I recognize not everybody gets a choice. You don't get to pick where you want to go. You don't get to pick the crew you want to be with. You don't get to pick, you know, and for many of my volunteer friends, you don't get to pick the kind of the grouping that's going to show up or whatever. But I have never experienced in any place I have ever been, I've never once experienced a situation where I could not go find, even if it was on the other shift, or if it was in the, you know, the place down the road for you volunteers, or maybe the department down the road, you go find the dialed in company officers, the dialed in senior men, the other recruits or people at your age that have a pulse, you know, that have a fire in their eyes. You go find those people. Even when I was a brand spanking new, didn't know much about the fire service airman in the Air Force. And I got sent to a small department in Louisiana that had some civilian off that mostly was civilian officers. There was a few military officers, but mostly we were getting assigned to civilians. Even there, I had the instincts to know I want to go find the supervisors that are going to be the best. And I tried to get assigned to those supervisors. And even if I wasn't assigned, I hung out with those guys. When they were doing stuff, I hung out with those guys. Matter of fact, I just reconnected because I left the Air Force a long, long time ago. You know, and had a young family, so you get off in the world, you're just trying to make a living, you lose track with people. I literally just tracked down my supervisor, one of my two key supervisors from the Air Force, and reconnected with him, what, 30 some years later, just to say thank you. Because he was so influential in showing me what it looked like to be good and successful. And I have made that a staple of my career for my entire career. And it goes on to today. I still am always looking for the people who can motivate me, show me a different way to be. And as an encouragement to many of you who are younger than me, that is not just old people. There is plenty of younger folks with incredible skill sets and insights and talent. I am constantly looking to sharpen off the folks that just bring something different to the calling and a different view of what we're doing.
Okay. With that being said, can you tell us, including myself that I don't know, a little bit about Seattle, the size, how many stations, personnel, is best, you know, best to your knowledge?
You know, I don't know what the size of the city now is. I think it's like 600,000-700,000 during the day, or you know, or populous at night, and then during the day it can be, you know, 3-4 million, you know, with everybody coming into the city, you know, and then doing the big fleet. Seattle fires 33 firehouses. I think close to 1,000 uniform members, maybe a little bit more, something like that. So, you know, I guess you would call it a moderate to large size. It's definitely a metro, you know, department. So I guess towards the larger size. Progress, you know, really historic criminal department in many ways, but I feel like very progressive. I always felt like trying to, in many ways, trying to be on the cutting edge and at least open to new stuff that was being going on. Not all the time, but I felt like as a place to be that we, certainly on the EMS side of the things. I mean, people visit Seattle from around the world to how we're doing medical type of stuff. On the fire side, we tried to get a culture going where they'd visit us for our fire stuff as well, and in some respects we did. I mean, there are elements that Seattle Fire has been very influential. First and foremost, air management. The stuff that me and my buddies started doing in air management 20 some years ago, the National Fire Service was not doing air management the way they're doing it now. We impacted the national conversation, and that began in Seattle. The energy stuff, the EV energy stuff that you're seeing right now, that everybody now is doing. My brother, Captain Chris Green, was one of the first ones to really genuinely get an energy team going on EV batteries and those types of things. So, yeah, I'm grateful, dude. What else to say? I felt like, definitely warts and all. Seattle's got some warts, and certainly some warts right now with all the things that they're going through. But man, once again, I'll be grateful to God for the remainder of my life that I got the privilege of having a place on that team, because it was epic.
Okay. Do you know what the minimum staffing is across the apparatus?
I don't. I can take a stab at it. I thought it. This is just a stab, but in my memory bank, I've been away for a while, and I don't know what's changed because. Because of some of the challenges that they're facing, they're browning out a lot of rigs now. There's a lot of rigs that I would have never been out of service when I was there that are not in service. They're struggling to staff the department, that kind of stuff. I thought like around 205 or 213, something like that, I think. But
And
I'd be taking a stab. I don't know.
but so w when you were on, what was the minimum staffing on the engines and on the
Oh,
ladders?
I see. Yeah. For the first part of my career, it was three-person staffing on the engines, and the trucks would typically run four and sometimes five, but typically four on the trucks. For the second half of my career, we actually, in our contract negotiations, we, the firefighters, gave up money. We gave up part of a pay raise, which never happens. Nobody ever gives up pay raise. We actually gave up, I think it was 1.1% or something like that, to go to four-person staffing, because we felt as a body it was so important to have that fourth member, and I still feel that way. I still feel four-person staffing is essential. And candidly, I think trucks should be staffed at five. I think it should be an officer and four firefighters, so you've got two distinct teams that you can legitimately split. And if need be, the officer can peel off to help command or to do other types of things. Or there's just some instances, for example, there's some roofs that you cut. Two people's tough. But if you have three people, it still allows you a split. In some instances, with a four-person truck, I would have loved to have split for some additional search activity, but the roof was too complex. I had to take four bodies up there.
Understood.
So again, it goes to, this is a much more nuanced conversation, so many different examples, but I always, one of the reason I love the truck is because the truck was so non-linear. There was so many different angles you could go on. And part of that, when you started to get good at it, was how you deployed your team. And strategically, if, especially in the first couple minutes of the fire, what bodies go where to make the biggest impact? Who am I having search here? Can I split a search team on bigger houses and have them go to different floors? Those types of things. A five-person truck company would have, whenever I had a five-person truck company, it was a game changer for the ability to make decisions on strategic deployment of my resources. But three for the first half, I worked on a lot of three-person companies, so I know what that's like. And then four for probably the second half of my career.
In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Oh gosh. It's funny, since I've been in this for such a long time, I've got to watch the pendulum swing on the aggressive conversation, the aggressive. I've got to watch it now twice. I want everybody to take this in the right way. I don't even use the term aggressive anymore, because I think it doesn't have any meaning, or it's just inflammatory for everybody. I think I know what most people that are using the term aggressive, I know what they're talking about, and I mostly agree with them. You don't do this job well without a desire to get dirty. Let me tell you something, gang. I spent my time as a firefighter and a company officer when there were fires. We spent our time, because remember, we would often have a lot of bodies show up. Because I had, staffing wasn't a problem for us, at least most cases. Sometimes it was, but most time we ended up having within the first 5, 10 minutes, we had plenty of bodies there. We would spend our time trying to find a way to get an assignment to get into the fire. I mean, there's pictures of me circling the command post when we're second, when we're third or fourth or fifth due or whatever, circling the man post trying to get us an assignment. Because at my very core, we don't get that many fires. I mean, a lot of people are out there lying about how many fires they get. Even in the city, gang, I don't feel like we got a ton of fires, at least not as many as we wanted. I was always trying to find a way to get my crews in to get work done. And I wanted to be inside or up on the roof getting work done. It's a desire to get dirty, to use our skills that we practice all the time. The way I think of aggressive, I think of wanting to be, whenever you can, in the best position possible to impact the incident. And I know there's a case made where, well, part of that is being at staging and being ready to go and being ready at a moment's notice. Like, you're right. Yes, that's true. However, when I think of aggressive, I think of wanting to be at the tip of the spear, wanting to be wherever the most need is, and training to a standard to be ready to do that. You have to have a motor in this thing if you want to be good. I think of it as having a motor and having a desire to stand next to other people who have trained and are kick butt and, be in the thick of things. When I think of aggressive, that's the way I think of it. I'll tell you what I don't think of it as. I don't think of it as being a kamikaze, just being stupid. I don't think of it as it's on fire, we're going in no matter what. I can't imagine a more unprofessional approach to the fire ground and a deadly one for folks. A ebb and flow of aggressive to aggressive. And I actually think that's a great process. I think most of the people that I run with, we're going to peg to the got to be careful because we're going to be too aggressive. Because when it's go time, we want to go and we want to get in and we want to rock and roll. And that's the only people I want to work with. I don't want to work with cowards. Nor do I want to work with people that are so aggressive they make damn fools out of themselves and they put everybody at risk. So that's where I see the balance in this aggressive, whatever. I think it's aggressive and safety is the pendulum swing that keeps going back and forth. I'm totally into us being as safe as we can be. I really am. Intrinsically within our profession, there is zero way to make what we do 100% safe. And everybody knows that. There's zero way. Listen, you put on a badge and you committed to standing in the gap in people's very worst day when their lives are on the line. And their lives are on the line because dangerous crap has happened all around them. It's going crazy around them. You're going to be put in positions that the most sane people in the world would say that's completely unsafe. If you train to a standard of excellence like we do, it ain't as unsafe as it appears on the outside because you have quality protective equipment. You know how to size up situations. You have water and things to cut a path. You have a breathing apparatus that, if you practice with it, will allow you to be in toxic, carcinogenic type of environments. I think if you want to ask me how aggressive you should be, my follow-up question before I answer is, how well are you trained? If you're trained to the standard that the truck company I worked on was, my guys, when I retired, I had four company level officers coming off of that rig. They were firefighters, but they were trained to a standard. Any one of them could have been a dynamite company officer. They knew the job frontwards and backwards. Well, I'll tell you, our aggressive level's up here because we've trained to a standard. We know where we can go, what we can do. We have a pretty good sense of when something is lost and when it's not, because we've trained and trained and trained. If you're not training all that much, or you like wearing the t-shirt, but you're not willing to go find fires and go, train with people who've been at fires and go learn about the other fires in your department, I would say you're going to have to be much less aggressive because you don't really know what you're doing. And so you don't know how to evaluate when something's about to go haywire. You can't tell when the conditions around you have changed because you're just focused on right wall search, right wall search, right wall search. When you're really good, you've got the right wall in mind, but you're kicking off the wall. You're spreading out. That's just an orientation point. You're just back to that and you're not thinking about that anymore. And you're paying attention to conditions and what the room configuration is doing. You know, that's when you can be really aggressive. So I don't know if that fully answers. I know everybody wants like a Merriam-Webster's definition of aggressive. I think it's nuanced. I think you didn't get like most of the sports teams that I've been on, except all the sports teams I've been on. I didn't get on the team to sit on the bench, man.
Right.
I didn't want to sit on the bench. I wanted to show them that I had a fire and I had a motor and I had a skill set and I'd do whatever it took that I could be out on that ball field. I wanted the ball in my hands. I wanted the bat in my hands. You know, that's the way I feel in the fire service. And once you feel that way, aggressive doesn't, that term, you don't really have to worry about it.
Right.
You're, you know,
Right.
you're there without it having to being there. I feel being aggressive, being intent upon being a part of this whatever emergency scene is going on, to me that's baked in the cake for people who are worthy of the badge.
Okay. All right. With that being said, one of your topics you wanted to talk about was commitment to training and how important it is.
Yeah.
Essentially, training and firefighting should go hand in hand, but unfortunately, you know, we have some folks that we all know somebody in this line of work that anytime training comes up, it's like, oh my gosh, why do we have to go do this? Why do we have to go do that?
Well, let me here's what I would say to you folks that are dealing with those folks. Everybody feels that way from time to time. Everybody has those days where it's like, ah, oh, damn it, we got to go throw ladders again. You know, my kid kept me up all last night, or I was doing this or doing that. I always took the approach that it's every firefighter's God-given right to piss and moan. All right, that's going to happen. You got to get past that. You got to just say, oh, yeah, no, I know it sucks. It's probably going to rain. Let's go get it knocked out. Let's go throw ladders for an hour. You know, let's go get this rig into pump and knock the rust off and or whatever it is. And opera,
Right.
you know, but some of the best training opportunities, they pop up unscheduled. And you got to be ready for that. You got to adapt your day. You know, I mean, some officers, they have like a list of the day. And if they don't check the list off, you know, they're having a heart attack. I always had a list of things I wanted to get done. It was just a list. You know, it's like, yeah, I'd like to get this. I have to get this done. I'd like to get this. I'd like to get this. I'd like to get this. But damn, we just went on an old person down, you know, fell out of bed and went to pick up an old person. And man, look at this building that they're in. It's this big building with all these other old people. And man, we could have a fire here. And look at that roof. That roof looks crazy. Well, dispatch, can we put our stick up and, you know, we're going to drill on this roof for a half. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, well, that day some of the lists didn't happen, right?
Right. Right.
I would just encourage you, gang. Training is crucial and essential. By essential, I mean you don't have a choice. This thing is hard that you've taken on. The fire service is hard. It's very nuanced. There's a lot of complexity to it. It's ever changing. There's things going on now that I, you know, didn't do when I was in the fire service. That if I was still doing it on the rigs, I'd have to learn that stuff. You forget stuff along the way. You have skill sets as you're pursuing other skill sets. You have skill sets that you were good at that start to fade. You got to go back and address those skill sets. I would just make training a normal part of your everyday routine as it pertains to the fire service. Every single day that I am invested in the fire service and doing the fire service, I am investing in basic skills. I am doing basic skill work because that's available to every one of you. Some of you have really crappy officers. Some of you have, you know, low energy teams, I guess as it will, that don't like to do a lot of training and that type of stuff. Some of you maybe have your own little bit of motivational problem. I mean, I would go back to the earlier conversation. That's why you hang around people who are motivated, because they'll fire you up, right? They'll get you going and they'll help you see what's the important things to do. I'll tell you what is one of the main motivators to train, and it's a bummer one, is when you suck and you go to a really important event and you do a bad job. I mean, and that's gonna happen even if you're good. Even
Right.
if you're really, really good, you're gonna have some bad runs and some bad fires and things just happened. And I'll tell you what, I can still remember some of them that it just, man, that did not go quite the way we wanted it to go. You want to train to such a standard that those are very minimal because they are a punch to the gut. The flip side is really true. The more you commit to this thing, the more you do it, the more you enjoy it, it's going to be more fun. You're going to spend less time bitching and moaning about B shift or C shift or the other department down the street. The more you commit to this and you're training in it and integrating relationships with other firefighters, and there's something magical that happens when you drill with people. You connect with each other in a way. It's like being in that foxhole, being in the trenches with each other, at practice in football or baseball or whatever, where you're actually working together to make things awesome. You build relationships that are you don't build them that way, build them in any other way than that. Gang, it makes this thing a blast and fun, and you're not worried about, what the fire chief is doing, or what the drama queen on A shift is doing or whatever. It's really transformational. And you only have a short amount of time in the fire service. I know I'm talking about 40 years, which doesn't seem like a short amount of time. Gang, my 33 years being on a fire truck are gone. It's over. Coat's on the hook. Unless something I'm not expecting happens, and unless I can get my back rehab to a place where I can do it, my getting on a fire truck and going to fires, that's done. I miss it. I miss it a lot. Man, train hard. Train to be worthy of this calling. The three things that we give you. I'll do this short. I talk about this quite a bit in our leadership class. We give you three things when you join the job. First thing we do is we pin a badge on your chest, which every one of you remember, right? You get a badge on your chest. That's our badge. That's the fire service badge, right? You need to be worthy of that thing, man, because people have sacrificed for that thing. People have given their lives so that badge could mean what it means. And every time you put it on your chest, you should earn that badge. We then narrow it. You and I have different things on our uniform. We put a patch on your arm, right? That narrows it down to your team. This badge is our badge. That's everybody in the fire service. Your actions are representative of everybody in the fire service, and you better be talking and acting in a way that does tribute to that badge. Then we narrow it down with a patch. Now it's your team, right? And the hopes and dreams of the community, the expectations of the community are when they see that patch on your shoulder, you're a person of impact. You're a person of dignity and respect and character. And at their worst day, they can come up to you. And that is representative of what fire service and EMS service is in your jurisdiction. And man, are you owning that? Are you training to a standard where that's going to be awesome? Think about your skill set. You want a motivator? Just think about the fact that how you perform in front of the public on that CPR or that seizure or that kitchen fire or that apartment fire or that auto smash up on the roadway. Whatever it is, how you perform has a direct impact on what people think about that fire department that's on your shoulder. If you suck, what do they think about your fire department? The fire department sucks. Yeah? Good motivator. Here's the last thing, and you can't run from this. You can hide behind the badge because there's a lot of kick-ass people that represent that badge. So you kind of hide behind that. You probably have a bunch of people and a good history in your job. You may be able to hide behind everybody else here. The last thing we do on your uniform is we write your name across the pocket. You can't run from that. If you care at all about what is thought when your name is spoken, you're going to want to train to such a standard of excellence that when your name is spoken, the people who hear your name go, yeah, good firefighter. Love to be on that person's crew. Love to have them on my crew. And here's the thing, that story's being written however you do. So right now, if I every one of you who's listening to this, if we lined you up in your fire department right now and we had you say your name, when your name is spoken, it tells a story. And that story is the quality of the person you are, the type of teammate you are, and what kind of firefighter you are on the fire ground.
Facts. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay. All right. At what point in your career did you decide I'm ready to move up to that next level? Whether it's promotional, well, I am talking about promotional, but at what point and why?
My answer to this probably won't be overly popular. And it may not be practical for some departments. I can only tell you what I think. I feel like you need to spend time in a place for a while and get good at what you're doing.
I'm with you, 100%.
I always kind of had in my mind just a rough number of 10 years was kind of a minimum for when you start talking about things like promoting to lieutenant or captain, those types of things. I recognize that's not reality in some departments because departments are too young, so you got to do what you got to do, you know. However, I really want to encourage you to be happy and good where you are. So if you're on an engine company, get good at that. You know, if you want to get on the truck or you want to, you know, whatever, that's great, but get good at where you are, you know, and enjoy where you are. I had a good time at every step, man. I didn't have to be a lieutenant to be happy in the fire service. I was happy. You know, I spent about 5, 6 years on the truck. That was my first assignment. I felt like I needed to spend time on an engine if I was ever going to be an officer. And so I purposefully left the truck. Scandalous. I left the truck to go to an engine to do some engine work. I ended up spending about 5 years there. In the middle of that, I ended up getting the driver job because the driver quit. So, boy, you know, you talk about a steep learning curve. I mean, phew, from very little engine experience to now I'm driving the rig. That experience was essential to me as a company officer. I mean, I learned so much driving the rig and what the officer needed from their engineer and those types of things. I just would encourage you, gang, to get a good foundation of skill set under you before you're actually responsible for a crew. Whatever you can do to make that happen. And I realize it's a bit artificial because I was in a big department. So, you know, promotions came around more frequently, I think, than what happens in some of the smaller departments. So you've got to gauge against that. I know there are other pressures. I felt like I wanted a solid bank of experience under me before it was all riding on me to make the decisions for other brothers and sisters. And my mark was about 10 years. I probably could have done it a little bit earlier than that. I think I ended up promoting about my 10th or my 11th year, somewhere in that range. I mean, my heart pumps a little bit when we're talking about 4 and 5 years people are promoting to officer positions. I guess I would say if that's the way it is, you are where you are. Just make sure that if you are in that position, you are training overtime to get experience, and you are mentoring off of other officers who have a lot of experience. I guess that would be my short answer. I definitely think you need substantive time on the job, and you need lots of sets and reps. You need lots of training. I can see a 5-year guy being a good lieutenant if they've really pursued those 5 years hard. You know, if you've gone to classes, if you've gone to training, if you've worked really hard to mentor off of other tenured vets, I can see that being okay and working out. Plenty of 15, 20-year guys that I've met got no business being officers because they just haven't pursued the craft in the way they should.
Right. Okay. Love it. Which characteristics holds more weight in your opinion? Years of service, education, work ethic, or on-the-job experience?
You know, I feel like it's a difficult question to ask because it's an incomplete question.
Okay.
You know, tell me about your years of service. Were they good ones? Did you work hard at it? Did you, I mean, because some guys got 10 years of service, they got the same 2, 3 years over and over again. It really isn't 10 years of service, you know, so there's a qualifier in there. I feel like for me, a better way to answer that question is to say that they integrate with each other really, really well. I actually don't necessarily view any one of them as more important, although quite candidly, if I had to tip to one, you cannot discount experience. Just actually doing the job, being on the job, actually doing what the job is instead of just kind of talking about it or theorizing about it. But look, there's a value that comes with time on the job. So years, there's a value because you're there, you're doing it again and again and again. It's sets and reps. There's incredible value there. Education, I know everybody poo-poos education. Man, if all you've got is a piece of paper on the wall, then I don't really value it that much. I mean, it's fine. You did something, that's cool. But what are you being educated in? If you're being really educated in like one of the key things that makes people good in this job is just being able to teach or to have good interpersonal reactions with other people. If some of your education is helping you to be a better instructor, helping you to train in a more effective way, helping you to understand cultural differences, what generational differences, the difference between me, a boomer, and the folks that are, the Generation Z's or whatever it is that they're coming now. There's some generational differences there. If you're getting educated on how to reach those folks and make them an integral part of the team, gosh, that education is valuable. They say, well, training is more important than education. I probably would say, yeah, actually doing the job. However, if you're trying to train people that you can't communicate with because you can't connect with them, all your training's for nothing. So you see, they really integrate beautifully with each other. And I'd have a hesitation of highlighting one over the other. I wouldn't rest on any one of them. I feel like all of them lack in some way. You never get enough experience. We never get enough fires. I'm sorry. You
Right.
just don't. You don't go to enough fires. And those of you who think you are fire-breathing dogs and you awesome. Ah, salute. God bless. I was in a pretty big city, pretty busy city, busy firehouses. I never felt like I got enough fire to just be awesome at it. I had to go find that training. I had to do sets and reps. I had to learn from other people's fire. So there, the training and the education part was crucial and essential to fill those gaps. My time on the job, I had some years that were really, really good. I had some years that were decent. I had a year or two where I'd like to have them back. They weren't as productive as I like, So tell me about the quality of what you're doing in each one of those things, and then I can paint a picture for where you're spending the right amount of time in any one.
Okay.
Probably too political of an
No,
answer.
no, no, no. I'm good with it. I'm good with
Everybody wants experience, experience,
it.
experience.
I'm good with it. So with what you just said, it's probably my guess that you are a proponent for outside training.
Oh Lord, you can't get good at this, fully good at this, I don't believe, without augmenting your training. I'll tell you, I have zero respect for this wave of thought amongst our members that it's the fire department's job to train me 100% on everything I'm supposed to know. Zero respect for that opinion. And look, I also understand where some of our pushback is coming from because I'm a big believer in family. I don't believe the fire department gets everything of yours because you got a family to raise. You got other people in your lives and other things to do besides the fire department. I am a proponent of giving the fire department what it deserves. And part of that is you're gonna have to spend some time getting good at the craft outside of what the resources the fire department has. Plus, let's face it, every one of us has worked in fire service leadership that they're not gonna give you everything you need. They're not even gonna try, right? Half of them don't even know what's out there because, they're trying to run the fire department, and they got this X amount of resources and whatever else. And we had a look, I was a Airman in the Air Force. I've been a single income firefighter family for our entire career. My wife has just worked at, maybe little small things here and there, but never a big second income. I know what it is to pinch pennies. I know what it is to be paycheck to paycheck. And I can tell you, even in our most challenging times, we had a percentage of our budget that was reserved for me to attend training to get better at the job. So, if that answers your question. Look, here's the cool thing. Just think about it this way. The fire service draws in some of the brightest, most motivated, incredibly talented people in the world. And those people all just didn't go to Seattle Fire. They didn't sign up for Seattle Fire, right? They're in fire departments all over this country, and everybody views things a little bit differently. It's refreshing and encouraging to go seek out different minds, different voices, people who are doing things in a little different way. The successes and the failures. You learn a lot from people's failures, and those that are willing to talk about them, you have an incredible ability to maybe not repeat those mistakes. Because, mistakes for us end up oftentimes being devastating. You have a chance to not repeat those things because anything that anybody else has done, you probably have a shot of doing it, right? That comes from interacting. Plus, you'll meet some of your best friends, you know, in and around fire conferences, you know, at FDIC, at all the great fire conferences across the nation. You'll meet people like you, you'll integrate with people like you, and you will find some of your best friends in that environment.
Okay. All right. Prioritizing making a firehouse great. You know, with I'm sure with you traveling around, you have seen, you know, some of the traditions of the fire service that are still relevant, and some organizations or stations or departments that tradition is now lost. But, you know, you mentioned that that was one of your topics, making a firehouse great. In your opinion, what makes that? What creates that?
Man, that's a I got a whole big long class on that. So
Okay.
that's a love big topic. Just in our short little time that I have here, let me just encourage you that the firehouse is where it happens for most people. That's where your career happens. You're going to have an awesome career or a crap career based upon how you approach the firehouse, how you approach your time together with fellow brothers and sisters. You are going to get to go to fires, you are going to get to go to auto extrications and a host of other things. But where is the bulk of your time going to be spent in your career? Honestly, you're going to be in whatever your guys' configurations are listening to this. The fire hall, the building that you go to, the firehouse, you know, on Thursday night for drill night, the fire department, the firehouse that you are assigned to, and whatever. You're going to be amongst that group of people, in those four walls, trying to have a good career and create a good team. Why not make your firehouse awesome? Why not commit to that? Because that's where you're going to be, right? You're going to be there. That's where you're going to learn the craft for the most part. That's where you're going to kind of either create really great bonds with your fellow brothers and sisters, the folks that are actually going to be at your side when your life's on the line. That's where you're going to be creating those bonds and those strength of relationships and those skill sets. Number one, just prioritizing it. Make it awesome and make a commitment to make it awesome. And that starts with you. That starts with you owning your stuff. That starts with you accepting the fact that it's nobody else's job but yours to have a great, awesome career. Now, I hope there's a lot of people along the way that help you out. I hope you have good mentors and officers and chiefs and all that type of stuff. You can't take that for granted, man, because you don't know what you're going to get, right? It's on you. And the cool thing is, the fire service allows you to go on the ride of your life if you'll just commit to it. And I would focus on my firehouse, and you know, and folks would say, "Man, well, you don't know the people in my firehouse, you know? Maybe you had just great firehouses your whole time." Man, give me a break. I had tough times in firehouses and difficult people and people that were burned out and pissed off, and some of them were just evil, you know? And then there were people who were awesome and amazing. Go get with the amazing people. Start creating a vibe within your firehouse of a commitment. I don't think it's all that difficult. If you will own your stuff and take personal responsibility for your actions, for your words, for your deeds, for your own personal training, for helping out fellow brothers and sisters, that's the first start and the great start. You know, if you will commit to an ideology of a vibe that we want our firehouse to be respected. We want when people say Station 31, Ladder 5, kick ass. How do we do that? Well, let's start doing things that make us awesome instead of make us like schlubs. Let's stop treating people and fellow brothers and sisters like crap when they come into our firehouse. Let's start showing them this is a place to be. Let's start being a group of people that train together, that trust each other, that are, you know, if you want to be trusted, and it's essential in the fire service that you be trusted, be trustworthy. Be the type of person that's trustworthy. Don't be the type of person that when people come up to you, they're like, "I don't know which version of this guy I'm going to get. You know, am I going to get the guy who's so caked in salt that he, you know, makes everybody sting? Or am I going to get the guy that doesn't really want to talk to anybody, you know, wants to show up and go off and be on YouTube for, you know, 5 hours, or go play whatever the newest video game is for 5 hours?" Be somebody who's trustworthy and commit to a rock and roll team, where every member of the team gets to bring the cool stuff that they have, their individual skills and talents. They get to manifest those skill sets in making the team better. Everybody on the team ought to be doing training. And I don't just mean participating in training, I mean implementing training. You and I could spend 5 minutes here, Danny, and we could talk about our skill sets. And by the time we got done, there's some things I'm really good at, and there's some things that you're really good at. Why not take the things that we're all really good at and help the other folks get good at those things as well? Because we're all not good at the same things.
Right.
That would be the starting point. I think the first part is owning it, owning your part of the team. The second part is committing to making your place a place you can be proud of. And then you train and work towards a standard of excellence that justifies the notion this is a kick-ass place to be.
Message. I love it. In your opinion, do you think ego plays a factor in sometimes that those relationships not happening?
Oh, yeah. And we've all got them. And, I've blown up a couple bridges that I'm embarrassed to say that I blew up through the years. Here's part of the challenge. What did I say I wanted to be true? When you talked about aggressive, what did I say that every firefighter has to want to do? They got to want to get in and get dirty.
Yes.
Type A, get in there. Ah, break. I want to be on the nozzle. I want to have the chainsaw in my hand. Well, you bring a collection of that type of people together. You're going to have friction. You got a bunch of type A's and, banging against each other. That's the only type of crew I wanted to work on. I didn't want to work with jerks, but I definitely wanted to work with people who were fired up and wanted the ball in the bat in their hand, I think it's a constant process of just reminding yourself that you're prone to looking out for yourself. And that's what ego is. It's just looking out for yourself. It's thinking you know more than you know. More than, it's, boy, I could do a better job than the chief type of thing. And say, well, you're not the chief, You know what you are? You're a tailboard guy. How about stop worrying about the chief? Get good at the tailboard. There'll be time to be chief down the road if you want. Get good at the tailboard and look and hang out with the people who are good at the tailboard. Here's the most difficult challenge that you will face. I think it's probably one of the most important pieces of advice I can give. And it's also one of the ones that you're least likely to do. I know this from history. I know this from experience. If you want to get a good compass of yourself, you want to know what's actually true about you as it pertains to ego or your demeanor, the way you speak, just get some people around you that you trust, people who will tell you the truth. Not your best fishing buddy. Get a collection of people, people above you, people at your level, and just create an accountability group. And I have this. And it's a simple conversation. I would just take them off into an office, and there's no officer, senior firefighter, none of that stuff. It's just Mike and Rick. It's Mike and Jason. It's Mike and John. It's Mike and Ann. That's all it is. And I would just tell them, look, I'm a high energy, hot-blooded dude. And that can get you in trouble sometimes. Right?
Right.
I have a great deal of pride in those types of things. You have 100% access to me that anytime you see me violating my values, violating my standards, being detrimental to the team, not leading in the way that I want to lead, saying or doing things that are contradictory to what a good man or a good firefighter or a good officer would do, you have 100% permission to take me privately into the office. Don't do it in front of everybody. Take me privately into the office. All this crap comes off. The bars come off. All that comes off. And I want you to tell me honestly about what I'm saying, how I'm saying it, what I'm doing. It serves as the accountability group serves as a mirror to how you really are based in your mind, how you think you are. And we have a ton of blind spots. The accountability group helps shine a mirror on some of those blind spots that you're not recognizing. And I have gotten invaluable lessons from my accountability group who loved me enough to not let me fail. They were willing, because those are uncomfortable conversations, right? It's uncomfortable telling somebody, hey, man, you're being a jerk, or your ego is through the roof. Believe me, I got some of those conversations. They're no fun. They were essential and crucial to me as a human being and as a professional to actually being the type of professional that I wanted to be. You're muted, Danny.
Oh, I don't know how that happened. All right, technology.
That's me talking too much.
No.
That's your computer system saying, "Would you tell that guy he tried to mute me?"
Family and work choices. It's one of those things that I had to kind of figure out, but I didn't figure it out on my own. I figured it out by getting myself outside the four walls of my firehouse, the way we do things, and attending conferences where a lot of these conferences are also telling you, like, hey, it's good that you're here, but remember why you're here. Your family is missing you. You're missing that time away from family. So to find that balance, there are so many conferences, micro conferences that I want to attend, and I just can't attend them all. But I try to find that balance where I communicate with my wife, and we plan. Okay, if you go this time, it's good because our daughter's in school. I'm still at work. Things like that. How important is finding that balance? Because it's very easy that if you want to get good at this job, it's very easy to lose sight of sometimes of what's really important.
And I would take it back to in the broader scope, it's just like the aggressive safety question, right? There's always going to be an ebb and a flow, a sliding, you're gonna find yourself. I don't believe there's any true balance point ever. You know what I mean? I always found myself ebbing and flowing back and forth between, too much time at the fire department, and then I had a few times where I had allowed my private life to where I wasn't feeling like I was giving Seattle Fire what I wanted to give it, right? I think that's healthy. I think that's normal. I will say most of this is focused on how cool the job is and how to be good at the job, and you obviously know how I feel about that. I think it's crucial and essential. It's no more crucial and essential than whatever profession or calling you take up. Whatever you're doing, you want to be good at it, right? I mean, especially if you're money at it, if you're being paid to do it, you have to earn your paycheck. But even if you're a volunteer and you become part of the team, you want to earn your spot on the team, right? You want to be worthy of that role and that spot, and it's a commitment you made. I would say this to you guys. My commitment to my family came before any commitment to the fire service. That commitment was intrinsic to my mom and to my dad and, to my family members, certainly. And when Ann and I knelt before God and gave our lives to each other, man, we made a sacred commitment. I made a commitment, gang, and so did Ann, to a God that I believe in as much as I'm talking to you right now. And that commitment matters. And we said we were going to have each other's back, and we were going to look out for each other and take care of each other. That commitment comes before everything else. If I felt the fire service was destroying my marriage, one leaves, guess which one kicked to the curb? It ain't my wife, right? Now, I hope I can serve as at least a little bit of an example in that I have gotten to live a fire service career that has been incredible. I mean, amazing, and it's ongoing. And Ann and I are headed towards 40 years of marriage, and we're as close as we've ever been. And it isn't like there aren't ups and downs and times, and like I said, there's an ebb and a flow of at times she's had to set me down and say you're gone too much, whatever, and we pull that back and all those types of things. But here's the truth about the fire service, and I hope you at least get a sense that I love the fire service. I'm grateful to it, but my coat went 7 years ago. That's done, right? I have a picture of it, actually. I have a picture of the last 15 seconds of my active fire service career. When the firehouse I was working in for 10 years, last 15 seconds, I took a picture of where my coat hung for 10 years, and I walked out of the firehouse, and I'm no longer an active firefighter. That's done, right? What a absolute horror on that day, which is already an emotional and dramatic day. What a horror if I had gone home to an empty house. If I'd gone home to a broken relationship and a damaged relationship, I never allowed that to happen, gang, and I'm encouraging it to take steps to make sure it doesn't happen for you. I went home to my best friend. I went home to my buddy. I went home to, Anne wrapped me in her arms. She knew I was emotional. She told me how proud of me she was, how wonderful of a job that I had done. And now the next chapter of our life was going to be great. and we were going to do other things together and that type of stuff. There's no formula for this. There's no you spend X amount of hours here because life is what it is, right? And your job, even the jobs that aren't the fire service, they take a certain amount of time. You can't make your family or your marriage an idol that you just worship all the time. It just has to be the priority, right? And by priority, you talked about, I can only go to so many conferences here. See, you're already doing it. You're deciding, you're saying, 10 of these look awesome, but I can do two. That fits, right? That fits without me getting divorced, or my little girl who you let get on the webcast a little earlier. My little girl doesn't forget who her daddy is, or I'm not present in her life and helping her to grow as a human being. I can do two. You guys sort that out. You have that conversation. You put on the calendar. Your calendar's crucial. You purposefully schedule your date nights, your family time, your time that you're going to have with your kids. That stuff intentionally gets put on the calendar. And then where there are gaps, you can fill in around that with professional responsibilities and church responsibilities and whatever it else is that you do, your hobbies, when you play softball or when you play pickleball or whatever. All that stuff can kind of fill in around the priorities. I just encourage you to determine what your priorities are. Our priorities have always been very clear. We've deviated from them on occasion, and we were unhappy when we did. But Ann and I come first. Our relationship comes first. Now you'll say, well, what about your kids? It's like, well, the kids were a product of our relationship, and I'm 60 now. My kids are old. There are a lot of you that are listening now. You could be my kids. My kids are heading towards 40. They're gone. They're doing their own things. They're doing their own lives. They didn't get to dominate. Now there are times when their needs came first, right? And you got to deal with that as a parent. They come first, and we had a wonderful time with our kids and involved in their sports and in church and all this other stuff. But it always was in it with the reflection back to Ann and I are a unified team. Our relationship matters, and we're going to be no good to the kids if we're no good for each other. That is happening across the country. My wife's a product of, kid of divorce. Don't tell me for a minute, despite what all the new age counselors are saying, that divorce doesn't impact your kids. It actually makes them better. Baloney. That's garbage. Divorce has a dramatic impact on you as individuals and dramatic impact on your children. It's a reality. Divorce is not the end. You can have an amazing second act and third act, whatever, But boy, oh boy, why not make the first act awesome? Number one, find the right person before you can, you connect with each other. Get the right one. I was fortunate enough to get the right one. I don't know if Ann did or not, but I got the right one, man. And then number two, nurture that relationship and give it the attention it deserves. If you just will communicate, I know the book that we wrote, The Challenges of Firefighter Marriage, we wrote a book on this topic. Anne identified five key conversations that you should be having with your firefighter spouse. And if you're having those conversations, you eliminate a lot of the real bad tension points. That's where I would start. I would start with the conversations just about, number one, understanding trauma and danger, what it does. It changes us a little bit. So some of what's coming home, that spouses want to know what's going on in our world, even when we're only doing mellow stuff. But having the conversations about reentry time. What do you do in that time when you come from the rock and roll world of the firehouse back into home life? That intersection is a real tension point. If you talk about it and you talk about ways to not make that a problem, you can eliminate a lot of hassles and a lot of arguments and getting on each other's side, right? You do have to talk about things like the terse language, the gallows humor, what worked for me and telling my crew what to do and the way we talk doesn't work when I come home, And our word for that was Ann would always say, "Hey, whoa, whoa, whoa. Remember, I'm not a firefighter." That was our phrase for danger, danger, danger. You are starting to talk like you talk at work and you ain't at work anymore. It helped us because it helped me to, it's like that mirror shining back. Uh-oh, I'm being a jerk. Uh-oh, I'm talking too bad. talking about just the bad runs and how to navigate the bad runs. What does your firefighter need when they come home after a really bad type of run? Because a lot of times we don't want to talk about them, but we're acting a fool, we're distant, because we're thinking about that. The spouse thinks it's about them. That's why you have the conversation, right? You want to talk about that stuff and talk about those conversations and just make sure that you have a process in place to deal with the really difficult runs so they don't damage your home life. The fix-it mentality, huge, because that's what we do,
That's what
right?
we
We go in the
do.
workplaces and we fix it, right?
Yeah.
You come home and you have that fix-it mentality. That's not often what your spouse needs.
Yeah.
If you have the conversation about what do you need, it really helps. Our simple phrase, again, you can see there's purpose here. We develop phrases, we develop safety words, right? Ours for that one was, and would say, you know what? Well, I kick into fix mode, right? It's
Right.
like, my girlfriend, she said this about da, 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 da. I'm like, well, we'll tell her to pound sand and remember, you're a good friend. She didn't need that. She doesn't need the 5-point plan on what to do. I would just say to her, babe, is this something you want me to fix, or do you just want me to listen? 95% of the time, she just wants me to listen.
Right.
She wants to sort it out on her own. And it's like, okay, I shift from fix the problem to now I'm just an empathetic voice. Every once in a while, she did want me to say, what do you think I should do? All right, well, now I can go into that mode. Just really helps. And the last one is keep first family first. Again, that goes to your calendar, your scheduling. If you want a good idea of where you are, just go back and look at the last 3 months of your calendar and your checkbook. Or most people don't have checks now. Go back and look at your
Your
credit
online
card
account,
statement, credit
right.
card, or your PayPal or your Venmo. Look at that.
Right.
Where you spend your time over the last 3 months and where you spend your money will give you a really good chat snapshot of what you value in life, what your real priorities are. I would ask you to sit down with your spouse and just have a conversation about what are we about? What are our real priorities? And if your priorities are, like a lot of people will say, well, our priorities are, God or whatever your spiritual deal is, God and then family, and then some kind of professional thing and then friends and fun and whatever else. All right, great. Whatever you think they are, whatever you want them to be, now look at it against the last 3 months of your calendar and the last 3 months of your checkbook or your money, where you spent it. Where you spend your time, where you spend your treasure, that is a clear indication of what your true priorities are, not what you post on Facebook.
That's a fact. And I can tell you, for me, being a young, I don't know how to word it. My marriage isn't brand new, but it's still new compared to, 40 years. I don't have 40 years of marriage with my wife, but that fix it mentality. Sometimes all she needed was, I don't need you to fix it. I just need you to listen. And I had to learn that. And it is very true. Like, we're so wired where, hey, we're dispatched to a call. We are dispatched because we are the problem solvers. But that doesn't always work when it comes to the household. And without having that conversation, so now it's like if she needs to vent, I just let her vent. I listen. And then if and sometimes she'll just be like, that's all I needed. Thanks. I just needed to vent. And but having that clear communication definitely goes a long way because coming into this game, or coming into this profession, through my experiences, I've witnessed the guys that are like, hey, I'm getting divorced and whatnot. And I told myself, if I go into this jumping, with both feet, I don't want to be that statistic. I'm only going to do this once.
Right.
That's what I've told myself. I'm only going to do this once. So I love the fact that, you have that experience. You have that awesome communication. And one of my questions I was going to ask you was, why did you decide to write that book with your wife, and whose idea was it?
Let's see the book. I'll tell you the last thing that I ever imagined in the world doing was opening up our life to the world and writing a firefighter marriage book. So that was not on the radar. The short version of this is Seattle fires over 1,000 uniform members. You can literally go your entire career, and there's a percentage of the fire department you will never meet. You can do 20, 25 years, whatever, and there's people you will never meet them. I know that seems hard to believe for, folks in normal sized fire departments because, you may not work closely with people, but you at least see them, or whatever. When I became the, and you can get isolated often to, your own battalion or your own neck of the woods. And I know my fellow recruits that I went through recruit academy with, they all got spread to the four corners of Seattle Fire on four different platoons, and you just lose track of people. When I became the training captain and I went down to the training division, now I'm seeing everybody because everybody goes through the training division, right? All platoons, all everybody goes through. So people are swinging by my office and saying hi and reconnecting. And brother, it's just a steady stream of, hey, how's your wife? Whatever. Oh, we got divorced. Oh, I'm living in my car right now. Oh, I'm in a court battle with my wife. Horrible. Devastating because these are all good folks. At least I think they're all good folks. A lot of them I had met their spouses, and I'll tell you, it was heartbreaking and it impacted me. It was depressing, and I just kind of brought it up to Anne and I said, "Man, baby," I said, is there anything I don't know? are we all right? She's like, "Yeah, what?" I said, "Well, God, man, I mean, does anybody make it anymore? Doesn't feel like anybody makes it anymore." And then I asked her just a simple question, and maybe it's a great question for you to talk with your spouse about. It got the conversations for us going. I asked her, is living with a firefighter hard? Is it tough? And she said, yeah. And I said, well, can you give me a couple ideas of what can I say? To tell me how we've made it. If it's tough, how have you navigated it with me? Well, she's really thoughtful. She's really smart. She's a good writer. She ended up making a 10-page annotated document about different things that we had navigated or whatever. And I was blown away. I mean, I thought I was going to get like a post-it note with a couple of little tips. And I got this, I want you to be encouraged. Not all of you are 10 pagers, probably. I was a 10 pager, out of that, because I was so blown away by what she was saying. And it made so much sense to me why, firefighters and spouses can disconnect or not connect and get sideways with each other and what the job brings in and how misconceptions can happen. I told her, well, man, you should write an article on this. I said, this helps me. I think this would help people. And the short story is, even with some pushback, we actually got her first article published in Fire Engineering Magazine, and the response to it was overwhelming. So much so, she got more editorial comment and stuff than I got for any of the articles I wrote all those years, which we almost got divorced over that, right? Now it was cool because it pointed out there was a real need. Everybody knows there's a need for it. Nobody knows what to do. The article did so well that then we got commissioned to write a book on it, and then we wrote the book together. And the book's written in such a way that the first kind of half to two-thirds of the chapter is Anne writing from the spouse's perspective. The last part of the chapter is me writing from the firefighter's perspective in response to what she had to say. And the five conversations are really well detailed in that book. It's the key part of the book. It probably would be beneficial for a lot of folks. You can go into a lot more detail in the book, or we also do the firefighter marriage class for departments. So if you're interested in the book, Amazon has them, Fire Engineering Books has them. Or if you want to get my contact info, if you want a personalized copy, we can personalize to you and send you one, in the mail. They're $25, I think, something like that, plus whatever shipping is.
And lastly, I always like to ask the guests where they would like to end up, where they would like to, finish their career, before they decide to hang it up. But you've already done that. So I'm gonna kind of tweak the question and ask you, you retired at the rank of captain. Did you fulfill, or do you feel like you have fulfilled your fire service goals before you decide, hey, I'm done.
So many different scenarios there for people. It's hard to give it. I'll tell you what here would be the way I would enter that question. I think your goal should be to live your dreams in the fire service. And I think as a leader in the fire service, that should be your goal for your people. Find a way to help people live their dreams. You don't get to live them all. You don't get to, that's Disneyland. That's fantasy, right? Live your dreams, man. Go for it. What is it that you want to accomplish? You want to be really good at driving the rig and being a driver and engineer for your career? God bless. We need drivers so bad. We need quality. We don't need everybody to be a company officer. We don't need everybody to be a chief officer. If your desire is to be the most kick-ass engineer in your department, good grief, you're going to be valuable to our
Right.
organization. Some guys just want to stay on the tailboard. They want the nozzle in their hand. They want to fight fires until they're 60. That's awesome. Man, great. You know, what fires you up? What are you good at? What can you contribute to your fellow brothers and sisters and team to make things awesome? And I think that's where you focus your time, effort, and energy, and you focus on being a good teammate, on being a good member of a good team. There's no way I could have accomplished everything that I wanted to accomplish. I did kind of make the decision that I wanted to stay on fire trucks. I didn't that's the position of battalion chief, especially in Seattle Fire, did not appeal to me. I enjoyed getting on fire trucks and going to fires. That's what I did. Some of my dreams, because of that decision, had to go away, because there's some things you can only accomplish at the battalion chief, the deputy chief. So there's a decision process in there, right?
Right.
I also am very interested and motivated in decision making and good tactical stuff and leadership at the firehouse level. That's where I felt like my skill set was, so I focused my time there, right? I'm not the guy who's going to be, teaching you how to tie knots and doing confined space or, trench rescue or that. I enjoy it when I'm doing it. It's fun when I'm doing it, but I don't enjoy it the way the guys who are really good at it do, and they get it. They get it on a level that I don't. I'm not going to be the hazmat guy, and I enjoyed some of that, but I'm never going to be into it to the level that our hazmat guys were incredible, how skilled they were. I stayed in the area that I felt like I was most skilled at and that fired me up. My answer to did I do everything I wanted to do, or did I fulfill everything? I'm still trying. I'm still at it. I mean, with all my heart. In fact, matter of fact, when I get off of this, I'm going to be working on some fire related stuff to try to help out with air management and things of those nature. I'm still at it. I would encourage you, if you have not seen the Firefighter Air Coalition website, or you haven't seen my Facebook page or LinkedIn page, I'd encourage you to go there, because just yesterday we launched a program that we're doing. The Air Coalition bought 20 full rides to FDIC. 20 full passes to FDIC, and over the next 7 months, we're just going to give them away. So we're not going to do a popularity contest. We're not going to, nobody has to write a thing about how awesome you are. At different places, at different times, everybody who's registered has a shot at winning one of 20 full passes to FDIC 2026. I get excited about that stuff, man. We're going to go try to get the money to pay for them now, right? But I want people to be able to afford training, to go to training, to be fired up about training. I want to write things that help people be better at the job, better at their marriage, better people. So for me, brother, the career is still going. It just isn't up on a roof cutting a hole,
Right.
or laying a line. I'd encourage I was tired when I retired. I was done. I was empty. I had given Seattle Fire everything I had, and I was empty. And I was headed to a point where I could see myself being one of those burnout dudes that everybody hates, and that hates the job. A lot of people are leaving hating the job now, right? I left still loving it. I left a little, maybe a year or two earlier than I had planned on. I wanted to get past 30, that kind of thing, just for pension and every other thing. The more you're in, it's like, you know what? Love this thing, love this department. And I left loving the job, loving the department, and I'm glad I did. And I would encourage you to have something after the department that you can really enjoy doing that's meaningful, And
Definitely.
trust me, that exists. It exists. It exists in every organization. There's things to do. Man, a lot of you, I think, that'll be listening to this, probably you're in the volunteer or the paid on call departments. Good gosh. Your presence as a mentor, your presence as a voice, and helping people along the way, being the mirror for them, absolutely crucial and essential, even if you feel like you can't go on runs anymore or that type of thing. So I don't know. I hope that answered at least somewhat.
Definitely. No, it's your perspective, and I was just like to ask the guests. Mike, I truly appreciate you doing this. I love the message. I'm sure the listeners are going to love the message too. Thank you for being you, for being genuine. Sometimes, you stated some things in this episode. Hopefully that's, I think some might not want to hear, but need to hear. It starts with accountability. It starts with, for me, it's looking in the mirror. It's very easy for me to talk a big game about how I want this, that, and the other, but am I actually living it? Am I preaching it? Am I doing it? So I just want to say thank you for coming on and spreading what I call the gospel when it comes to positively contributing to the fire service.
Oh, brother, you're welcome. Good on you for doing your little bit. You're living your dream, right? You
Right.
wanted to impact. You wanted to give people some insight, and not everything I said is going to resonate with folks. That's cool. I don't know
Right.
everything, man. And you know
Right.
what? I might have said some things that are wrong. I'm just a normal dude. Take the stuff that you feel like you can resonate with and do better with, and then the stuff that you didn't agree with, go find the people that actually have a better message. And build that into your game. Ultimately, at the end of it, you're going to spend 5, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years in the fire service. Why not make it enjoyable? If you're going to be there anyway, right? If you're going to spend time at the firehouse or the
Right.
fire hall or at the drill building, why not make it as cool as it can be for the time that you're there? That's, I guess, would be my primary motivation and being worthy of the badge. You really want to be worthy of this cool thing because it's amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I said, thank you for taking time out of your day to do this.
Yeah, man, you're welcome. God bless. I
Yes, sir.
hope to hear this, and I hope you make me sound probably way better than I deserve.
It all yourself, but I appreciate it.
Right, man. God bless.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.